This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, and this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, November 7th, 2019. Ahead this hour, the 21st edition of the Arkansas Poll gives us an idea of where Arkansans land when we're thinking about guns, immigration, and elected officials. Arkansas Poll Director Janine Perry will be with us in just a moment. Then later, a door-to-door campaign in Fayetteville to encourage residents of some neighborhoods to plant trees. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tagged along last weekend, and we'll hear her report. And we continue our month-long participation in the Purple Project for Democracy. After our show on NPR's Here and Now, as wildfires continue to rage in California, we visit the town of Paradise, where residents are just getting back on their feet following the deadliest wildfire in the state's history 1 year ago. That plus the latest news from Congress and the White House on Here and Now, beginning at 1 on 91.3. The Arkansas soccer team continues play in the SEC tournament this afternoon in Orange Beach, Alabama. Arkansas, the top seed in the tournament, faces perennial power Florida at 3:30. The winner advances to the Sunday afternoon finals. Today's game will be on the SEC Network. Here, clouds will begin to move out this evening and temperatures are expected to plummet by late night. Lows tonight in northwest Arkansas around 21. Upper 20s tonight in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, clear conditions, highs close to 50 throughout the region. This is Ozarks at Large. The 21st edition of the Arkansas Poll is out. The poll asked Arkansans, what is the most important problem facing the state? It asked about elected officials, about immigration, about guns. The poll is sponsored by the Diane D. Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society at the University of Arkansas. The poll's director is Janine Perry, professor of political science at the University of Arkansas. She is with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Welcome back to Ozarks at Large.
Well, thanks for having me back.
Okay. Every year, I look at this poll, and I become this instant expert, and then I ask you, what am I extrapolating that is not correct? I love the question, what's the most important problem facing Arkansas? This, based on the Arkansans you asked, what I found interesting is 2017, 14% said healthcare. 2018, 23%. This year, 9%.
Mm-hmm. It is a puzzle in light of how much it's part of the national conversation, specifically with reference to the presidential election, of course. But it appears from other public opinion research in households, too. This does bounce around. You know, I've been doing this for two decades now, and almost always the top three issues are the economy, healthcare, and education. Everything else will fall into the single digits pretty easily. So it was a little strange to see healthcare that low, but I think we have to keep in mind that there's a lot of subjectivity in categorizing these things, because in odd-numbered years, so I like that you went back to 2017, and that's why we try to present a little bit more of the data kind of in reverse, you know, so people can look back. In odd-numbered years, we ask the question open-ended, and then we do our best to categorize responses. But the responses are all over the map. So when you think about the economy, that could easily be wrapped up into healthcare.
Sure.
So, of course, could the climate or even drug addiction or other kinds of things that have, you know, sort of extend into these other policy areas. So it's real squishy. I try not to make too much of a single finding in a particular year. I say that, but it doesn't mean I don't notice either.
Right.
So, and I mean, yeah, it's just the economy encompasses a lot. When I'm looking at the individual responses, it's a real rough measure.
I loved looking at the approval and disapproval numbers for our president, because it shows that Arkansas, like much of the country, is, where are we? I mean, the approval for President Trump of the people you asked, 50%, the disapproval, 45%.
Sounds dead
familiar.
Even.
Yeah.
Exactly. Spoiler alert, the country's divided, Kyle. yes. And even more than that, the pattern we see again this year is that national level figures tend to have lower approval and higher disapproval. in general, and we see that again this year, than state level figures. And the governor almost always does well. We do. And that's true in other states. Usually when they are unpopular, they become deeply unpopular. Of course, lately everyone's been talking about the race in Kentucky, for example. So when you're unpopular as governor, you'll know it. Governors in general have done well, and that's been true for, I think, since we've been, you know, collecting public opinion data. So Arkansas governors in general enjoy that as well. You know, typically, instead of just feeling good about at least half the people approving of the job, it's very typical in Arkansas and elsewhere for them to get two-thirds, even three-quarters of approval, and we see that again with Asa Hutchinson this year.
You asked a lot of questions about guns in the 2019 Arkansas poll.
We did. It's something I've asked one and only one question almost every year for the existence of the poll since 1999. And it's just sort of, do you want stricter or less strict regulation? And I think that's done a fair job of capturing whatever it is that we're talking about in the country or in the state right at that moment. But it's clearly something that deserved a little more probing, as we've seen a slate, a kind of a menu of policy proposals coming from the state legislature, many of which have been adopted in the last couple of legislative sessions, and then coming at the national level, in which they haven't been adopted. And I thought, in light, too, of the fact that some national polling organizations have tried to capture this menu many times, and these are coming from really credible organizations like Pew and Gallup and Marist NPR and things like that, I thought, well, let's take one of those really current findings from the national level and see how it translates to Arkansas. Because something I've found over the years is that Arkansas herself, and then also, or even more so, people from outside Arkansas, tend to think that we must be wildly different from the average American. And in the past, when I've had comparable data, I've discovered that's almost never the case. We're typically just a few percentage points off of whatever the national finding is. But I don't always have space to report that. It's just something that I examine and maybe share with students. But in this case, I thought, let's take that battery from this fall, from a national sample, and let's just apply it to Arkansas and see. And for the most part, you see us doing it again, looking a lot like the average American.
I mean, on these gun questions, I'll give the Arkansas sample number first and then the national sample.
Okay.
And it's so close. Increased funding for mental health screening and treatment, Arkansas 90, national 89, say yes. Require background checks for gun purchases at gun shows or private sales, Arkansas sample 85, national 83. Arkansas actually more likely to say yes. National red flag law, 76 to 72, Arkansas sample first. License to purchase a gun, 67 to 72. All of these, pretty close.
Again and again. And we start to break out on a few of the issues. We start to look slightly different than the average, say, on school teachers carrying guns.
We're much higher than the national sample, yes, 52-37.
Right, in that direction. So we deviate, right, in that respect. But the majority of the time, a great majority of us favor gun restriction. And it's tighter, actually, when you look at the broad question. So for the this question, do you think it is more important to protect gun rights or control gun violence? The Arkansas sample for very likely voters only, control gun violence 48%, protect gun rights 44%. So right there in the margin of error, you know, most of us would say that's a divided sample. But it probably isn't what most people outside the state would expect of Arkansas in terms of the southern portion of her identity, and it's probably not what many Arkansans would expect of themselves. And then nationally, right, it's 56% more concerned about gun violence versus 39% protect gun rights. So we break out a little bit there, but in terms of sort of the philosophy, right, our relationship with guns generally, the abstraction, but when it comes to the specifics, we look a heck of a lot like the rest of the country. So I think that was something worth exploring. And then even more than that, I tried to use that model to test, well, how much support is there for what the Arkansas legislature has done recently,
right,
which is to emphasize more the gun rights angle of things, the looser restrictions and less greater restrictions in, I guess, the interest of gun safety and reduced violence. And here again, there are some exceptions, but I thought it was really interesting that while the Arkansas legislature has recently implemented bills relating to, say, taking, you know, having a concealed license would allow people to take guns into bars, that only 26% of an Arkansas-only sample said that they approve of that measure. Permitting ownership or sort of reinforcing the idea of ownership of machine guns, sawed-off shotguns, and silencers. Only a quarter of Arkansans supported that. But reducing the cost of a concealed carry handgun license, well, half of us support that and 41% disapprove. And, of course, for the Northwest Arkansas listeners, but also statewide, it was something that generated attention, of course, for several years when it came to having an enhanced carry permit and being allowed to take concealed handguns into college campuses. We got 52% disapproved to 43% approved. These aren't wide margins, but they're outside the margin of error. And I just thought it was telling in light of what happens when legislatures when they take on a supermajority, almost a monopoly quality. So setting aside the Democratic South, right, after the Civil War, including Arkansas until 2010. But when you see legislatures that are really lopsided, and this is something we know from the broader literature, we have evidence that suggests that when you match legislative votes with public opinion in those states, that the legislators seem to take that mandate farther than public opinion suggests they really want to go. There's kind of an exaggeration effect that comes with a supermajority or almost a monopoly of party power. And I wondered if that would play out here on something present, right? Kind of what we call an easy issue. Everybody has an opinion about it, so it's a high-profile issue. But even on guns, that largely appeared to be the case.
I think the best thing you can do with a poll like this is come out of it and think, oh, some of the things I thought I knew to be gospel might not be so.
And if that's all that I can get across in any given year, or certainly overall in the project, I think that would be a good product, something good to have produced.
Anything I missed on the poll that you want to make sure we know about?
Something I thought was interesting that actually came up in a social media conversation, perhaps ironically, is it happens that thanks to some collaboration off and on over the years with journalism faculty here at the University of Arkansas, I have asked about newspaper readership.
Yes.
And it's sort of an accident that I'd asked it some years and then not other years, but it gave me a little bit of a feel for how that may have changed as newspapers, as businesses, of course, are struggling, and as the way in which we get news is, of course, dramatically changing. And it's as we suspected. It was the case that far more people reported reading a newspaper on a daily basis or even once a week, you know, just 8 or 10 years ago, and now far less do. And while we know, and I didn't ask this follow-up on the Arkansas poll, we know from some really interesting research done now for a number of years from the Pew Charitable Trust that people are getting their news in different ways. I think we can extrapolate, though, that we also know that a higher and higher percentage of us are having a hard time distinguishing between fact and opinion. So we may not be compensating for print news the way that we may be telling ourselves we are. And I know that's true for me personally, and I consume more news than the average person. But glancing at a headline on, you know, your neighbor's Facebook page is a lot different from communing with a print newspaper in the morning. And yes, there are other ways to get news, but other data suggests, not Arkansas poll data yet, but other data suggests that, in fact, the quality of our information, the depth, the accuracy of our understanding actually is on a commensurate decline. And I just can't conclude that that's an accident.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, well, we'll end there.
So sorry.
Janine Perry is the director of the Arkansas poll, professor of political science at the University of Arkansas. The 21st edition of the poll available online by searching for Arkansas poll or by following the link at ozarksatlarge.com. Poll sponsored by the Diane D. Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society at the University of Arkansas. Janine, thanks as always for coming in.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support comes from Malco Theaters with locations in Rogers, Springdale, Fort Smith, Van Buren, and the Fayetteville IMAX Theater. Special showings including the Saturday Metropolitan Opera, music events, live screenings, and more. Malco.com for information and tickets. Support comes from Woodstone Craft Pizza and Bar on South School and Uptown in Fayetteville, offering wood-fired artisan pizzas using locally grown produce and meats, plus locally brewed seasonal beers. WoodstoneCraftPizza.com for more.
This month, Ozarks at Large, along with several other media outlets across the country, is participating in the Purple Project for Democracy. It's a nonpartisan campaign dedicated to the rediscovery and recommitment of democratic values and institutions. Throughout November, we're exploring civics, government, and public service. We continue today as Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda speaks with Jennifer Price, Director of Elections for Washington County, about provisional ballots.
So a provisional ballot is a process that allows us to verify information for the voter in an extended sense. So let's say you come to the polls on election day and I can't find your name in the voter registration book. And, you know, 60,000 people are voting on election day and there's phone call after phone call into the county clerk's office. But you know that you're registered to vote. There's just something why we can't find your information. And so it allows us to let you cast a ballot on election day because you can't come back on Wednesday and do it. It allows you to cast that ballot on election day. We set it aside with all the information that we've received from you. And then you have signed the provisional ballot envelope. And then it allows the county clerk and the election commission after the election to review your information. And we keep records. And so maybe it was just on election day. There's so many phone calls. We don't have a chance to go back and look at past records. And we can see if we can find your information. And if we do find that you are eligible to vote, then we can count your ballot. You're also given the opportunity to come to a provisional ballot hearing and present evidence on why you think that you are eligible to vote. So that's one reason you might cast a provisional ballot. There's also a process for a voter who is unable to show ID. So even though we are asking every voter to show an approved photo ID, if for some reason you are unable to show that ID, and we are not going to ask why you're unable to show the ID, we're not going to get into a whole thing. We don't need to know. As long as you say, I'm unable to show an ID, then we have you vote a provisional ballot. There's a process that allows you to sign. It's called an affirmation that you'll sign secondary to. There's two things you'll sign on that provisional ballot. You'll sign one that you are verifying that you are registered to vote. And then you'll sign another affirmation saying that I am who I say I am and I am registered to vote. So as long as you're willing to sign those two things, then you'll cast a provisional ballot on election day and we will count your ballot as long as we can verify that you are eligible to vote and you were registered to vote. So if for some reason, let's say the night before the election, you lost your purse and you don't have your driver's license anymore, and you don't have a passport, you don't have any of those things that qualify as a form of ID, but you still want to vote on election day. So as long as you come in and you just say, I'm unable to show ID, we're not going to ask. We don't need to know what happened. And so we'll walk you through that process to vote a provisional ballot.
That was Director of Elections for Washington County, Jennifer Price, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda as part of our Civics Education Series. All this month, Ozarks at Large and other media outlets across the country are participating in the Purple Project for Democracy. It's an effort to explore and explain civics and government. And you can learn more at purplefordemocracy.org.
Welcome to 60 Second Civics, the daily podcast of the Center for Civic Education. I'm Mark Gage. France provided the United States with substantial aid during the Revolutionary War. This aid, in the form of loans, weapons, supplies, troops, and naval support, among other things, was critical to winning the war. However, soon after the Revolution, America's relationship with France became problematic. Despite its agreement in 1778 to aid France, the United States did not endorse the radically democratic French Revolution of 1789. When France went to war with Great Britain, Americans were deeply divided about which side the United States should support. At the time, America's relationship with Spain deteriorated, as Spain sought to detach Kentucky and Tennessee from the United States, refused to allow American ships to pass through New Orleans, and aided the Creek and Cherokee Indians in wars with the United States. Not much later, the French Revolution's focus on human rights sparked slave uprisings in Saint-Dominique, now Haiti, that led to Haitian independence from France in 1804. The success of the Haitian Revolution caused slave owners in the United States to fear similar uprisings. 60 Second Civics, where civic engagement only takes a minute.
And the theme music for 60 Second Civics is provided by Cheryl B. Englehart. You can find her online at cbemusic.com. The song featured on the podcast is Cheryl B. Englehart's Complacent. You can find that on iTunes along with the rest of her music. And speaking of theme music, the Ozarks at Large theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. It's titled First Hurrah. You can find Daryl and his music at darylsean.com. He's often playing live on Facebook and Twitter. And the name of his most recent CD is Safe in Sound.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Headlines from this week. An economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis says a recession is coming, but it has not manifested yet. Kevin Cleason made those comments Monday morning in Bentonville at an economic briefing at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. We'll hear more from Cleason a little later on the program today. First, though, Steve Easterbrook, who was dismissed as president and CEO of the McDonald's Corporation over the weekend, resigned as a Walmart board member on Monday. The Bentonville company announced the departure in a filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. On Sunday, McDonald's, which is the world's biggest fast food chain, dismissed Easterbrook because of a recent consensual relationship with an employee, which is a violation of company policy. Easterbrook joined Walmart's board last year and was part of the Compensation and Management Development, Strategic Planning, and Finance Committees. His departure drops Walmart's board to 11 directors, led by Chairman Greg Penner. After the break, we will discuss the R word with Federal Reserve Bank economist Kevin Cleason. The R word, by the way, is recession. That's next on this edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. Local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
A recession is a macroeconomic term that refers to a significant decline in general economic activity in a designated region. It's typically recognized after two consecutive quarters of economic decline, as reflected by GDP in conjunction with monthly indicators, like, for example, employment. Recession is a popular topic right now in boardrooms and coffee shops and on the campaign trail. It was also a topic Monday morning in Bentonville at an economic briefing hosted by the Little Rock branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis and Heartland Forward, which is a new research institute established recently and based in Bentonville. Kevin Cleason is an economist with the Fed. I spoke with him after the program to find out more about his thoughts on that word, recession, and a few other topics relating to the national economy.
I don't think we're in a recession now. We're in the middle, not the middle, we're in the midst of the longest economic expansion in U.S. economic history. So we know a recession will come at some point. And typically those things occur because of things we don't anticipate or can't forecast very well. It may be the case that this sort of trade disruption we're seeing might be large enough cumulatively to drive the economy into recession. At this point, that doesn't appear to be the case, but who knows how things play out. So I think if we can resolve those kind of issues, that will help fuel the economy going forward, I think.
With all the data that you look at, what is one thing that is the most encouraging to you about our national economy? What is one thing that maybe is the most discouraging thing that maybe we need to work on a little bit?
Well, I think one of the most encouraging things is the labor market situation is very favorable. We have a very low unemployment rate, and that's spread across almost all demographics of society. So that's very good. The consumer is spending well and actually saving well. So I don't really worry about consumers leveraging, getting out of kilter in terms of taking on too much debt at this point. Now, on the things to worry about, businesses, on the other hand, seems to have taken on a lot of debt. So if the economy slows, they're going to get into kind of a situation where they're in a vice, where their profits will be being squeezed and their costs they have to meet because debt service will compete against that.
Right.
And the other thing to worry about is manufacturing seems to be fairly weak right now. And that's part of this sort of weakness in investment spending. And I think that ultimately then feeds back into the reason for that is because of the trade tussle with China.
When you look at your jobs numbers and run those reports in employment, how much does starting to see more robots in the workforce and automated and all that stuff, how much does that factor into, more so than maybe it did 5 years ago, into your jobs reports?
Well, the displacement of labor by capital has been going on for, you know, eons, right? So, you know, I'm an old farmer, and I, you know, I wanted to farm for a living, but, you know, there was not room on the family farm for me. So I had to go do something else. And so the displacement of labor by robots and other things is just something going on. I think what it does is that when you increase automation, that certainly helps the firm, it helps society in terms of if the firm can produce more with less, it leads to higher wages for those workers that still remain and more profits that get distributed, and that feeds into higher stock prices and so on and so forth. Now, obviously, the people that are harmed are the ones that are displaced. So what society has to do, and what we have done to some extent, is put in place training programs to help those people transition to something else.
Right. Any other major takeaways you hope people are walking out of here with today? I mean, a primary thing you wanted to convey to the group here?
Yeah, I think we've kind of settled down into, at least from a national standpoint, an economy that's growing pretty close to its potential. It's relatively slow. I think if we can resolve some of these uncertainties that are out there and avoid some of these bad things that might happen, I think we can actually see faster growth going forward.
Right. What are some of the bad things that might happen? What are some examples of those?
Oh, typically recessions occur because you have a sharp increase in oil prices, which we're not seeing. The Fed can over-tighten it, possibly, and I don't think that's really the case. The Fed is actually easing now. So, you know, you could have wars or something else, and who knows.
That is Kevin Cleason, a business economist with the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis. For more from Monday's economic briefing in Bentonville, log on to our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. If a recession is on the horizon, it is not a deterrent for Springdale furniture company James & James, which is planning a significant expansion early next year. Company owner James Smith said the business will open a new location inside the former Watson Furniture Building on South Main Street in downtown Springdale. The company's primary production facility will still be on Randall Wobbe Lane in Springdale. James & James also has a retail store on South Thompson Street in Springdale. The company has signed a 5-year lease to occupy the first floor of the Watson Building. That's about 6,800 square feet. Smith said that space is being designed to include both a large retail space and an operational wood shop. The areas will be separated by large glass windows so customers can watch the furniture making process. Smith said a website has been set up to give progress updates about the new space, and that's at thewatsonexperience.com. A tentative move-in date is early 2020. And that's all today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and I am joined now by Leah Uribe, an associate professor of music at the University of Arkansas. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Doing great. A little cold, but it's so beautiful in Fayetteville.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
It's that colors. Time of year.
All right. So some interesting things happening musically in the area. This week, Saturday is going to be quite busy if you want to attend all of these activities.
Good luck.
So starting in the morning at the University of Arkansas, there's the Saturday Jam Sessions organized by the University of Arkansas Community Music School.
Is it new?
It is new. It looks like a series of three Saturdays. So I am adding a link to our webpage with more information for the upcoming dates. This first one is Saturday, November the 9th from 9 to 12 p.m. With a $10 registration fee. And this is going to be great because it's, you know, a call for young musicians and older musicians just to get together and jam together. How cool is that?
So cool.
More information in the Facebook event and also in a music department webpage. This is organized by the University of Arkansas Community Music School, and the event is at the University Department of Music.
Okay.
Also, on Saturday at 2 p.m., Roots Headquarters at Geisinger Music House, we have Papa Rap that has been teaching kids at the Montessori School.
Aww.
And they are going to present their concert.
That's so fun.
This event is free and open to the public, 2 p.m. And this is great. I love Papa Rap. I mean, what he's done in the community, for the Latin community and also for the rest of the community to connect with the Latin community is amazing. He calls himself a Latino motivational speaker. He's a great musician. And it's a great bridge between communities and between ages, and such a great event if you want to go see those beautiful kids. Every time I drive by Montessori, tears come to my eyes because they're so cute when they're walking around with their backpacks. So I can't wait to see them in this concert organized at the Roots headquarters. Saturday as well, this is in the evening, Walton Center at 7:30 p.m., Sona, the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, directed by Maestro Paul Haas, is presenting the first concert of our season. This is the first Masterworks concert, and the program is just so delightful.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited. I play with Sona, and I am excited about all of it. We have a new piece by Jonathan Newman. It's called Blow It Up, Start Again. So this is one of the efforts of Sona to delve into the world of more modern music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really cool for us to, you know, get exposed, and for the community as well, to new repertoire. And then after that, we have two super important pieces of the repertoire for orchestra. The first one is the Violin Concerto by Beethoven. We have Jennifer Frauci, a violinist, coming all the way from California, where she's from. And she has a super amazing bio. She's been a soloist with many orchestras, including the Cincinnati Symphony, Chicago Symphony, L.A. Philharmonic, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and also recordings with Naxos, Albany Records. Just, you know, an amazing career and an amazing piece of music. I think many of our orchestras and organizations and universities are celebrating earlier, you know, the anniversary of Beethoven that will be celebrated next year. So here we go, Beethoven Violin Concerto. So great piece. And then on the second half is Rachmaninoff Symphonic Dances, which is a piece that highlights every instrument of the orchestra, another beautiful piece of the repertoire, a strong piece of our classical repertoire. So a concert not to miss. This is at the Walton Art Center on Saturday, November 9th, 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $33, $44, and $55. But also they have this special prize for students with an ID for $10. So I hope to see everybody there. Next week, we have some events at the university as well. On November 11, Monday, we have the University of Kentucky Faculty Brass Quintet playing a recital at Stella Boyle Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Center at 8 p.m. This is free and open to the public. And faculty quintets, I mean, not faculty quintets, brass quintets are such, fun ensembles. So versatile and so fun, and they can be somber and they can be happy and they can be martial. This is part of a tour that this ensemble is going through different SEC universities. So they're coming from the University of Kentucky and Northeastern State. And after us, they will be going to Louisiana State, University of Alabama, and University of Georgia. So we're lucky to have them here, and hope you guys go as well. Free and open to the public, Monday, November 11 at 8 p.m., Stella Boyle Smith at the University of Arkansas. Also, on November the 13th at the Faulkner Performing Arts Center, we have the Jazz Orchestra, University of Arkansas, Department of Music, Jazz Orchestra, directed by one of our professors, Dr. Rick Salonen. This is a great opportunity to highlight our jazz students. We just started offering this emphasis in jazz program with our music performance degree. So we're excited to, highlight what we have and also preview what is coming with these many offerings we'll have in the upcoming years for our students. So this concert is on Wednesday, November 13th at 7:30 p.m. at Faulkner, and is $10 general admission and $5 for student, faculty, and staff. Besides this, we have a bunch of student recitals highlighting the oboe, voice studio, guitar, tuba. So all of this information will be added to our link, to our page. And you can also find it at music.uark.edu. Lots of activities, and that's it. That's all I have.
That's plenty. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and I hope to see everybody soon.
Lia Uribe is an associate professor of music at the University of Arkansas.
Diva Fest, benefiting the Northwest Arkansas Women's Shelter, is this Saturday, November 9th at Meteor Guitar Gallery, downtown Bentonville. Performances by Divas on Fire, Brick Fields, Dawn Kate Band, plus Jana and the Hillraisers. Doors open at 6 p.m. Tickets online at MeteorGuitarGallery.com. Theater Square's Gala is November 14th, 6 p.m. at the Fayetteville Town Center. It supports education and access programs for 25,000 Arkansans. It will feature a performance and the presentation of the Arts Advocate Award. 445-6333 or theater2.org for tickets.
Tomorrow, on a Friday edition of Ozarks at Large, Candy Lee returns to the Carver Center for Public Radio.
All my life I wanted to live up in the mountains. In Arkansas, I made that part of my dreams come true. With a little house and a plot of land to plant a garden. But my greatest joy of all is sharing my life with you. And I will be your Ozark mama.
All right, Candy Lee, ready to release new music, and she'll play for us and talk with Timothy Dennis on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large that you can hear at noon and 7 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF. This is a Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. The City of Fayetteville's Urban Forestry Department is conducting a neighborhood tree giveaway pilot project to encourage neighborhoods with few trees to plant more trees. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
On a recent cold, sunny Saturday morning, a crew of city workers and a dozen volunteers gather at the entrance to Sloanbrook, a newly constructed subdivision off Broyles Avenue in West Fayetteville. The planned community of 113 homes is carpeted with thick green manicured Bermuda grass, but contains few trees. Prior to development, this was farmland, and pre-settlement, native prairie. John Scott, an award-winning urban forester with the City of Fayetteville, stands next to a trailer holding over 100 large native saplings purchased by the city in bulk, and instructs the group on how to proceed.
So, when we go to the actual homes, what we can do is we want to get their name, their address here, and try to get an email on how many trees they've taken. We have individual sheets. We only have 5 species of trees that were given away, and they're all pretty big trees. We have black gum, we have bald cypress, swamp chestnut oak, we have a willow oak, and then we also have a white oak. And then at the bottom of this, we also have a planting plan with the number to call before you dig. And then I also have some of these, if they want somebody to come and plant them, they can schedule to get their tree planted by emailing this person or calling this person. And I have these in my pocket.
Everyone fans out through the quiet neighborhood this morning, going door to door. Most of the homes are still decorated with pumpkins, spooky stuff, and corn stalks. 2 days after Halloween, John Scott knocks on one door.
Good morning.
Hello.
I'm John Scott with the City of Fayetteville, the Urban Forester. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. We can come back.
Okay,
thanks.
Have a good one.
The family's in the middle of breakfast. Scott heads to the next house.
We'd sent an email out earlier this week letting know that we're coming.
He says the city selected the neighborhood for several reasons.
Well, it's a relatively new neighborhood, and they have street trees, but we went through recently and noticed that there's not actually a lot of trees in their yard proper, if you notice.
The developers of this subdivision, situated on a former farm pasture, were only required to plant one tree per lot along parkways. The city does have a tree ordinance, which works to preserve older trees and prohibits developers from clear-cutting. Data from a National Agriculture Imagery Survey taken in 2017, which uses satellite imagery, shows Fayetteville has an estimated 35% tree canopy. The city wants to grow the canopy to at least 40%. Every October, the city holds a celebration of trees, giving residents free trees and shrubs in honor of Arbor Day. But this morning, the city's testing a new way.
Good morning. I'm John Scott with the City of Fayetteville Urban Forester, and we're giving away trees today directly to the neighborhood. Would you all like some free trees?
Some homeowners don't want any trees in their yard. And others, like Gary Ficicello, are skeptical at first, which Scott addresses.
Hello.
Good morning. I'm John.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. With the Urban Forestry in the City of Fayetteville.
Hi.
We're giving the trees away. Did you get an email about that?
You're giving trees away.
We are, directly to people, residents in your neighborhood that want the trees. We have.
They step out into the front yard to discuss.
I don't know. How many are you offering?
Two.
Oh, well. Am I greedy if I go for two?
You're not greedy.
But other occupants, like Robert Manti, show great enthusiasm for the pilot project. He selects a white oak.
I love it. I love trees. I think they're good for everything. Just the birds. I have a bird feeder out there that the birds don't have enough trees to sit in. So I'm looking for more cardinals.
Volunteer Diane Williams is here with her husband, Edwin, and a half dozen members of Compassion Fayetteville. She's a board member of the local chapter and is U.S. organizer for the International Charter for Compassion's Tree Project. The project, which aims to plant 7.7 billion trees around the world, has chosen Fayetteville as a pilot city.
It's about regreening the planet, starting right here at home. We are going to plant as many trees as we can afford and as much money as we can raise to regreen our city and raise the canopy to at least 40% and beyond.
Volunteer Nancy Harris, a founding member of Compassion Fayetteville, has been looking forward to launching the tree planting project.
And I love trees, and I want to see trees planted as many places as possible. They're really good for the environment and for people.
By 11 a.m., 34 homeowners, over one-third, agree to participate. Fayetteville Urban Forester John Scott.
We're going to come back through this neighborhood in January to see if the trees are in the ground, and then we'll come back again in April to see if they're alive. You know, it's just kind of driving through and kind of taking a look at it and see if they're alive. And then we'll come back in about 3 years to see if they're alive after that. We want to know if they are taking ownership for these trees and if this is a successful project for us to do it again, and we just kind of need to have that information, or if we need to adjust it and come out here with bigger groups to actually plant them same day, you know, have that kind of service going. So this is a new pilot, so just follow up is going to give us an idea on how to handle this in the future.
In effect, establishing a collaborative method to grow Fayetteville's tree canopy. Trees not only sequester carbon, they capture urban rainwater runoff, provide cooling shade, and habitat for wildlife. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
The Arkansas Children's Research Institute will receive just over $516,000 to study the effects of opioid abuse on the development of children from before birth to the preteen years. The grant is part of the National Institute of Health's Healthy Brain and Childhood Development Study, in which Arkansas Children's is one of five institutions participating. Dr. Ashley Atchison, one of two researchers working on the study, says the goal is to determine the role of opioid exposure in childhood development compared to other environmental factors.
Families with these type of substance issues often have other types of like economic and other kinds of hardships going on, and these things we know also can have effect on childhood development. So with a study like this, the phase two portion of the study would be able to really kind of be able to tease apart some of these different factors and how they influence child development.
Atchison says roughly 85% of the study's sample size will be children who were not exposed to opioids in order to study normative child development. The study will use imaging techniques both before and after birth to track brain development in children who've had prenatal exposure to opioids. The grant comes from $945 million invested by the NIH to address the opioid crisis.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, we're joined with Brooke Johnson. She's with a group known as Ozark Book Authority. Brooke, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
What is this? How long have you guys been around?
We actually started in February of this year. Scott Kammerzell is my co-president / vice president. And we're both board members on the Rogers Public Library Foundation.
Oh, okay.
After doing a few events with them over the last few years, we really wanted to put on a book convention. We put it toward them, and they thought that it would be better if we did it ourselves. They were like, hey, let's see what you guys can do by yourselves. So we were like, okay. And then we decided, well, if we want to do this convention, we need to have an audience for it. So let's put on events each month in the area and try to build up this literary community so that we have people to come to the convention. In March, we had some comic book classes. So we had weekly classes where we had a comic book artist come in and kind of explain the process to library goers and things like that. It's free. Almost everything we do is free. In April, we had a best-selling author, Richard Knack, come in. He writes Warcraft novels, or did write Warcraft novels.
Okay.
And so we did a Warcraft trivia kind of game show / interview.
Wow. So y'all put together some fun things.
Yeah, we really try to do things that are like memorable events, things that people are going to want to go talk to their friends about and be like, hey, you really got to come see this next event that we do, because it's going to be something that's not like anything else in the area. All of the money that we raise, we are putting toward other literacy initiatives in the area. And one of our big projects that we want to do this year is actually start creating little free libraries around the area in underserved communities, in places where people already go. So instead of trying to bring people to books, take books to people.
The Ozark Book Con 2019 coming up November 9th.
We have four best-selling authors from around the United States that are coming in. Mallory O'Meara, Tobias Bakel, Mer Lafferty, and Jackson Pierce.
Okay.
And we also have a collection of authors from the area, indie authors and traditionally published authors from Arkansas and the Ozarks, who are going to come and present panels, discuss about books and writing, just the process and how much we love the written word.
Again, this is November 9th. Location?
It's going to be at the Holiday Inn, Springdale, Fayetteville. It's going to be from 9 a.m. to 7-ish p.m.
So a true full day,
yes.
Which I think you would almost have to have. I mean, there's panel discussions, there's workshops, a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, we have a full day. We're going to have three panel rooms, so there will be discussions happening in three rooms all day long. We have tickets for sale through Stubbs.net. You can search just for Ozark Book Con 2019. You can find us on Facebook. We're everywhere.
Okay. Stubbs.net, then search Ozark Book Con 2019. Brooke Johnson with Ozark Book Authority. One last time, that Ozark Book Con 2019, that's coming up November 9th. And basically, you want to know more, search Facebook for Ozark Book Authority.
And we also have a website. It's www.ozarkbookauthority.com.
Awesome. Brooke, thank you very much.
Thank you.
As always, if something neat in your neighborhood is taking place, let me know. You can email me, pete@kuaf.com. The Community Spotlight and 91.3 Local Matters.
The Department of Theater in the University of Arkansas's J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences has named playwrights Jason Grode and Allison Mead the co-winners of the 2019 Kernodle New Play Award for their plays Desire Path and The Flora and Fauna. The reading committee that was made up of University of Arkansas graduate students and faculty members also named Candace Jones' play Flex as a finalist. The contest, named in honor of University of Arkansas faculty member George Kernodle, had over 150 submissions in 2019. The university says that demonstrates the abundant diversity of new work being created by playwrights across the country. And do you want pie for Thanksgiving? You want to make pie for Thanksgiving, but have never made one before? Brightwater, a center for the study of food, has you in mind. Tomorrow evening, beginning at 6, Chef Vince Pianalto will host a pie baking for beginners baking class in the Brightwater Bake Shop. That's on Southeast 8th Street in Bentonville. Each participant in the class will leave with two made-from-scratch pies and this is the big one, the confidence to return to their home kitchens and apply newfound pie baking knowledge. To find out more, nwac.edu/Brightwater Community Classes.
Support comes from Urban Jungle Tropical Plant Care and Rental, offering a variety of indoor plants, living green walls, and outdoor planters for restaurants, offices, and homes. Serving Benton and Washington counties with maintenance-free month-to-month care and services. 466-5033 or urbanjunglenwa.com. Walton Arts Center presents The Play That Goes Wrong November 12th through the 17th. It's a combination of Sherlock Holmes and Monty Python, full of mishaps and madcap mania. Ages 8 and up. WaltonArtsCenter.org for tickets.
And contributors to this Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large included Antoinette Grajeda and Jacqueline Froelich. Timothy Dennis mastered our show from inside the Harold and Blanchcock News Studio. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal with Paul Gatling comes to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. And there is a weekend edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling. That's on Weekend Ozarks at Large that you can hear every Sunday morning at 9. Additional content for our show today came from our partner station KUAR, providing public radio for Little Rock and Central Arkansas. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Marble. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. If you ever miss Ozarks at Large or you want to hear something again, there are many ways to stay in touch with us. One is to go to ozarksatlarge.com. There you'll find past full editions of our show as well as individual stories and interviews. But you can also subscribe to us as a free podcast. That way you can listen to us on your schedule. We're available through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Apple TV, NPR One, all Stitcher, all sorts of places. Oh, and you can also play Ozarks at Large on your smart speaker. Just say, play Ozarks at Large podcast. You can listen to KUAF by saying, play KUAF. You can listen to classical music by saying, play KUAF 2. And yes, you can listen to jazz when you want by saying, play KUAF 3. By the way, there was more included in our conversation about the 2019 Arkansas poll with poll director Janine Perry. We'll have that part of the conversation on Weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF. Antoinette Grajeda selects songs for us to close out many of our programs. And today we're leaving you with the song One Down, Forever to Go. It's from Opal Agafia. Opal will be at George's Majestic Lounge Saturday night for a new CD release. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Bundle up tonight, lows in the 20s. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for spending part of your Thursday with us.